Welcome to Sanctions Plus, the show that transports you to different regions around the world to explore culture, politics, and more, and learn a bit about developments in the sanctions world in a fun new way.
Brought to you by Denton's International Trade Team. The views expressed are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Denton's. This podcast is not designed to provide legal or other advice, and you should not take or refrain from taking action based on its content.
Our goal is to introduce you to friends of Denton's who have fascinating skills, knowledge, and talents, and to learn more about the world we live in. In the process, we'll share how some of today's sanctions developments might impact the world beyond business and politics.
Hi, Sharzad.
Hello, Milana.
I'm glad the weekend is coming up. How about you?
I'm similarly very excited for the weekend. We can talk more, but let's jump right in. Since we last issued our podcast episode, many things happened in the international trade world that are worth highlighting. So first significant thing that happened was OFAC's action relating to Russia.
In this one single action, on February 23rd, 2024, OFAC designated over 500 persons. The main implication, of course, is that the property and interest in property of these sanctioned persons within the U.S. jurisdiction are frozen. In addition, the Department of Commerce announced new Russia-related export restrictions, adding over 90 entities to the entity list. Being placed on the entity list means that there are restrictions on exporting items to these companies.
So what was the general theme behind the designations?
OFAC targeted Russia's financial and military industrial complex and other sectors of Russian economy. What was particularly significant, I think, was designation of entities and individuals in various jurisdictions like Germany, Ireland, Serbia, Vietnam.
So that's interesting because usually we see those third-party designations in China, the UAE, and Turkey. It's interesting to see them expanding into certain European countries as well now.
Right. Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan are not surprising,
no.
But some of these are. And the entity list had companies from India, South Korea, UAE, Turkey, Russia, Kyrgyzstan, China. This action shows that OFAC is very focused on sanctions evasion and on entities that are viewed as assisting Russia in evading sanctions.
The next big thing that happened was the Tri-Seal compliance note that was issued by the U.S. Department of Commerce and the Department of Treasury, along with the Department of Justice. The compliance note highlighted the applicability of U.S. sanctions and export controls to non-U.S. persons and the civil and criminal enforcement mechanisms available to the U.S. to hold non-U.S. persons accountable for sanctions violations. It also provided a compliance process recommendation focusing on risk-based compliance systems consistent with OFAC's prior guidance. It's important to note that the compliance note didn't impose any new obligations and it didn't modify the jurisdictional scope or reach of any U.S. sanctions or export controls. The compliance note makes clear that U.S. authorities are prepared to use civil, administrative, and criminal enforcement powers towards ensuring compliance with U.S. sanctions. The compliance note has various case illustrations and a list of best practices for non-U.S. persons and provides several recent examples of enforcement actions undertaken against non-U.S. persons for causing sanctions violations by U.S. persons. And this concept of causation is one that we see repeatedly used to expand the scope of U.S. sanctions to non-U.S. persons.
Our listeners may be familiar with OFAC's May 2019 framework for compliance. Question is, does this note add anything new to those five pillars? And just for background, the five pillars are management commitment, risk assessment, internal controls, auditing and testing, and training.
So it doesn't add anything new, but it does highlight the ways in which those core pillars are applicable to non-US persons. Importantly, the compliance note doesn't focus on secondary sanctions much. Instead, it's geared towards primary sanctions risks to non-US persons. And by that, I mean non-US persons that are engaging in activities that have a jurisdictional connection to the United States, such that OFAC can assert jurisdiction.
That's really helpful. So if you don't have time to read the 10 pages of the Tri-Seal Compliance Note, you can read our one-page review on Denton's website, or you can listen to us on Sanctions Plus.
So anything new on Venezuela?
As of today, end of March, no.
So where does that leave us right now?
In the limbo.
So remember, we were talking about those general licenses and the oil and gas sector general license, which is expressly contingent on continuous progress with the elections in Venezuela. In April, when that general license is up for renewal, there was a potential risk that U.S. authorities wouldn't be renewing it because of some developments in Venezuela. So what else would you like to highlight?
I would like to note something that you don't hear very often in the sanctions world. OFAC terminated an entire sanctions program against Zimbabwe. They unblocked all individuals and property that were blocked under the Zimbabwe authority, and they redesignated 11 of them under a different authority.
Okay, interesting. Also, U.S. Senator Marco Rubio introduced the Sanctions Recovery Act, which is a bill intended to incentivize, quote unquote, OFAC to more strictly enforce sanctions. He said OFAC has not been as aggressive in sanctions enforcement as it should be. The bill would allow the agency to acquire 5% of foreign assets seized as well as of sanctioned fines, and the amount collected would then allegedly benefit salaries and administrative costs and would allow OFAC to increase sanctions and recompense Treasury for further enforcement efforts. This is an interesting development from my perspective, especially in light of OFAC's highest enforcement amount ever in 2023, almost $1 billion issued against Binance.
I don't necessarily agree that OFAC has not been aggressive in sanctions enforcement. For now, it's just a bill, and we see these legislative initiatives come out pretty often, and not always they come to fruition. I don't make much of it.
So another interesting development: on February 28th, President Biden published an executive order 14117, which directs the U.S. Attorney General to issue regulations to restrict and, in certain circumstances, prohibit transactions involving sharing sensitive personal data and government-related data with certain countries that are called countries of concern. China, which according to the EO includes Hong Kong and Macau, Russia, Iran, North Korea, Cuba, and Venezuela.
So what's important is that there is no immediate prohibition or restriction on data transfer. We just wanted to flag that this is coming in the pipeline, potentially possible. The US government already has mechanisms for restricting supply of sensitive personal data to these countries and to many other countries through, for example, the CFIUS process, where you need an approval from the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States to allow certain foreign persons access to certain sensitive personal data.
Okay, so that's a great point and interesting to see where that EO goes and how it impacts the CFIUS regime.
Finally, can we please discuss the forthcoming Commerce Department change relating to the restrictions on certain persons identified on the SDN list?
Yes, for sure we can. The rule adds end-user controls and in some cases expands existing end-user controls on persons identified on the SDN list pursuant to 14 sanctions programs. And basically, it requires a license for the export, re-export, or transfer of items subject to the EAR when these SDNs are a party to the transaction. Notably, to avoid duplicative licensing requirements, any transaction action that would be covered by this new rule wouldn't require separate EAR authorization if the transaction's authorized under an OFAC license or is exempted. Previously, you were already, as a US person, prohibited from most transactions involving SDNs. And the EAR also imposed significant restrictions with respect to transactions involving items subject to the EAR with certain SDNs, as well as items going to Russia and Belarus. What happens with this new rule is that the EAR is expanding into transactions that would fall outside of the OFAC prohibitions. For example, transactions that don't involve US persons or the US financial system. So the impact is likely to be felt most by non-US persons.
So to put it in simple terms, let's think of an example. Previously, if you had a US-made bicycle, or a bicycle that is made with some parts of US origin. If you are a US person, obviously you are prohibited to deal with SDNs. You cannot provide that to an SDN. If you are a non-US person outside of the United States with no involvement of US financial system, you could previously potentially re-export that bicycle from, for example, Germany to Switzerland if such re-export did not require a BIS license for that item, that re-export. Now, if you're doing the same thing, but you're re-exporting it to an SDN, even with no other US nexus, you will require a BIS license. Is that what's happening?
If it falls within one of the 14 programs covered by the BIS rule, then yeah.
Not to every SDN on the list.
No, it's just the 14 programs that are subject to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them relate to Russia and Belarus, but also it includes like certain counterterrorism and WMD related sanctions authorities, NP, WMD, SDGT, FDO, terrorism related, all of the Ukraine EOs pretty much, and then the Belarus ones and illicit drugs, SDNT, SDNTK, and TCO.
Many other letters.
Love it, soup. Enjoy. Would you like bread?
Doesn't it also show the collaboration that we have noticed among the US government agencies? See how BIS is using another agency's list to impose restrictions and how it's becoming more unified rather than BIS having its own entity.
That's a
list.
Really great point. We've seen that an increasing trend the last few years. Yeah, so those were the big developments for this last few weeks. So now, on to our special seductive and neighborly. What does seductive mean?
Deductive. Is it a word? Deductive?
Deductive? What does that mean? What were you trying to say?
Deductive method of Sherlock Holmes.
But
deducive? Method of deduction.
Is, but it doesn't work here, I don't think.
It works in
you
my delusional mind.
Say seductive.
If that's what you heard. Special deductive.
The special seductive and neighbor. No, and the following one is neighborly. So it's seductive and neighborly at the same time.
It's like when you deduce the main point.
Uh-huh.
That's what I meant.
Okay. Can you deduce the main points from the current events happening around DC for me, please?
Cherry blossom. Fun things we like to do during this time a year in Washington, DC is go to the Tidal Basin by Thomas Jefferson Memorial and enjoy the beauty of creation. You're in Tidal Basin, you have the sunset and
it's
the
frugal.
Cherry blossom.
It's a good way of saying it, I swear. Beauty of creation. I think I've heard that before, but in the religious context, but I love it. Are you going to go to the Tidal Basin?
Hopefully, yes. One tip is not to take your car there and try to park. If you can, take Uber, take your bicycle, walk. Because we couldn't find parking last year and we spent an hour in traffic and I had to turn around because I had a client call or something. So we didn't go. Oh, I know what happened. I think my gas tank was empty.
No.
And it was either try to make it and then good luck with finding the way back
or turn around. Okay, so can I say something? So I'm not shocked to hear that. Your relationship to the road and to your car is a unique one.
We have a situationship.
Let me just talk about this for 1 second because I cannot let this go. No, for the last week was the first time that I had the honor and pleasure of going somewhere where Milana was driving. So we went to the CFIUS Women's Luncheon, which was awesome, by the way, and we saw a lot of amazing people there. Milana drove us there. Now, I will tell you, her spirits are high, okay? We almost hit, I think we almost hit three pedestrians.
We did not.
We almost did. I swear, you did not see a man crossing the street. You were moving to take a right, and they were literally about, not exaggerating, 10 centimeters from the car. And then we get to the actual venue. And what happens is we can't find parking, and we're already 10 minutes late.
Whose fault is
Milana
that?
sees a handicap spot that's open street parking. I'm like, Milana, we can't take the handicap spot. She said, wait, what time is it? Okay, so we gotta take this. And nope, let me just move down the street a little bit. We go down the street. There's a loading zone only for trucks. Literally, you park there. I cannot even begin to imagine. You park there. We got out. Nothing, not even a ticket. And you're still smiling after almost hitting that pedestrian and parking almost in the handicap spots and then loading zone only. I'm worried that you're gonna have your car towed. Not even. No, the best part about this whole thing is for me, driving downtown is a stressful experience. I'm like this behind, holding the wheel, double 10 and 2, neck like stiff, and I'm stressed, looking everywhere. You're just like driving, la 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 la, so happy. But anyways, it was fun. The event was great. We did make it, and yeah, the salad was delicious. Okay, so with that, I think we are ready to conclude the episode. Just wanted to plug that IABA, the Iranian American Bar Association, is going to be having their annual conference in Washington, D.C. on April 20th at the Westin D.C. at City Center. It'll be amazing. There will be panels on AI, a judicial panel, a immigration panel, and a US sanctions panel. Milana's going to be speaking on the panel. I'm going to be moderating the panel. So get your tickets. You can find them at the IABA website, and I hope to see some of our listeners there.
And the gala after.
Yes, there's going to be an amazing gala after that you can bust out a long floor length dress for or a nice tuxedo for if that's what you're into. There's also going to be great Persian food from Rumi's Kitchen, not sponsored yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, so that's it. And I want to wish all of our listeners a happy Noruz, Noruza Hamegi Mubarak. And I hope that you have a lovely spring with lots of laughter, joy, health, and happiness. Stay tuned and send us your feedback to sanctionsplus@dentons.com.
But make sure that you spell it as the sanctions and the plus symbol, and then at dentons.com. So
If the emails comes back to you undelivered, contact your IT.
we were your hosts,
Shahrzad Norbalouchi
and Milana Karaynidi, and this was the Sanctions Plus podcast, where we offer our sensible, direct, and new take on things happening relating to trade and culture.
Or as we say in the sanctions world, the SDN hot take.